the gift of Rome and Greece. But the Greek philosophers themselves wrote repeatedly that they had drawn on even earlier sources. The decipherment of the ancient Egyptian script and language, and the archaeological efforts that followed, revealed to Western man that a high civilization had existed in Egypt well before the advent of the Greek civilization. Was the origin of our civilization, then, in Egypt? Well, as logical as that conclusion would have seemed, the facts militated against it. Greek scholars did describe visits to Egypt, but the ancient sources of knowledge of which they spoke were found elsewhere. The pre-Hellenic cultures of the Aegean Sea, the Minoan on the island of Crete, and the Mycenaean on the Greek mainland, revealed evidence that the Near Eastern, not the Egyptian, culture had been adopted. Syria and Anatolia, not Egypt, were the principal avenues through which an earlier civilization became available to the Greeks. Scholars have been fascinated to discover a growing number of similarities between the Semitic and Hellenic civilizations. Professor Cyrus H. Gordon opened up a new field of study by showing that an earlier Minoan script, called Linear A, represented a Semitic language. He concluded that the pattern of the Hebrew in Minoan civilizations is the same to a remarkable extent. Even the Hellenic alphabet, from which the Latin and our own alphabets derive, came from the Near East. The scholars were aware, of course, of Greek contacts with the Near East in the first millennium B.C., culminating with the defeat of the Persians by Alexander the Macedonian in 331 B.C. Greek records contain much information about these Persians and their lands. It has been established by now that the cultural, religious, and historic roots of these old Persians go back to the earlier empires of Babylon and Assyria, whose extent and fall is recorded in the Old Testament. Many of the world's museums count among their prize exhibits their ceremonial gates, winged bulls, bas-reliefs, chariots, tools, utensils, jewelry, statues, and other objects made of every conceivable material that have been dug out of the mounds of Assyria and Babylonia. But the true treasures of these kingdoms were their written records, thousands upon thousands of inscriptions in the cuneiform script, including cosmologic tales, epic poems, histories of kings, temple records, commercial contracts, marriage and divorce records, astronomical tables, astrological forecasts, mathematical formulas, geographic lists, grammar and vocabulary, school text, and not least of all, texts dealing with the names, genealogies, deeds, powers, and duties of the gods. The common language that formed the cultural, historical, and religious bond between Assyria and Babylonia was Akkadian. It was the first known Semitic language. But the Assyrians and Babylonians laid no claim to having invented the language or its scripts. Indeed, many of their tablets bore the postscript that they had been copied from earlier originals. Who then invented the cuneiform script and developed the language, its precise grammar, and its rich vocabulary? Who wrote those earlier originals? And why did the Assyrians and Babylonians call the language Akkadian? Attention once more focuses on the book of Genesis and the beginning of his kingdom, Babel and Erech and Akkad. The ruins of Mesopotamia have provided conclusive evidence that once upon a time there indeed existed a kingdom by the name of Akkad, established by a much earlier ruler who called himself Asherakan, righteous ruler. He claimed in his inscriptions that his empire stretched by the grace of the god Enlil from the lower sea, the Persian Gulf, to the upper sea, believed to be the Mediterranean. The scholars stood awed. They had come upon a Mesopotamian empire in the third millennium B.C. There was a leap backward of some 2,000 years from the Assyrian Sargon of Dur, Sharakan, to Sargon of Akkad. And yet the mounds that were dug up brought to light literature and art, science and politics, commerce and communications, a full-fledged civilization long before the appearance of Babylonia or Assyria. Moreover, it was obviously the predecessor and the source of the later civilizations. Assyria and Babylonia were only branches off the Akkadian trunk. It also appeared certain that there must have been kingdoms and cities and civilizations in Mesopotamia even before the third millennium B.C. The only question was, how far back did one have to go to find the first civilized kingdom? The key that unlocked the puzzle was yet another language. Scholars took another look at the Akkadian inscriptions. Basically, the cuneiform script was syllabic. Each sign stood for a complete syllable. Yet the script made extensive use of signs that were not phonetic syllables, but conveyed the meaning God, city, country, and the like. The only possible explanation for this phenomenon was that these signs were remains of an earlier writing method which used pictographs. Akkadian, then, must have been preceded by another language that used a writing method akin to the Egyptian hieroglyphs. It was soon obvious that an earlier language, and not just an earlier form of writing, was involved here. Scholars found that inscriptions and texts made extensive use of loan words, words borrowed intact from another language, in the same way that modern Frenchmen would borrow the English word weekend. Now, this was especially true where scientific or technical terminology was involved, and also in matters dealing with the gods and the heavens. In January 1869, Jules Oppert suggested to the French Society of Numismatics and Archaeology that recognition be given to the existence of a pre-Akkadian language and people, pointing out that the early rulers of Mesopotamia proclaimed their legitimacy by taking the title King of Sumer and Akkad. He suggested that the people be called Sumerians and their land Sumer. Once the scholars had accepted these conclusions, the floodgates were opened. The decipherment of the Sumerian language and script, and the realization that the Sumerians and their culture were the fountainhead of all Akkadian, Babylonian, and Assyrian achievements, spurred archaeological searches in southern Mesopotamia. All of the evidence now indicated that the beginning was there. The first significant excavation of the Sumerian site was begun in 1877 by French archaeologists, and the finds from this single site were so extensive that others continued to dig there until 1933 without completing the job. The site proved to be an early Sumerian city, indeed a royal city. The dynasty had started around 2900 BC and lasted nearly 650 years. During this time, 43 Enses reigned without interruption at Lagash. Their names, genealogies, and links of rule were all neatly recorded. One of the better-known rulers of Lagash was Gudea. He had a large number of statues made of himself, all showing him in a votive stance, praying to his gods. This stance was no pretense. Gudea had indeed devoted himself to the adoration of Ningirsu, his principal deity, and the construction and rebuilding of temples. His many inscriptions reveal that in the search for exquisite building material, he obtained gold from Africa and Anatolia, silver from the Taurus Mountains, cedars from Lebanon, other rare woods from Ararat, copper from the Zagros Range, diorite from Egypt, carnelian from Ethiopia, and other materials from lands yet unidentified by scholars. When Moses built for the Lord God a residence in the desert, he did so according to very detailed instructions provided by the Lord. 1,200 years before Moses, Gudea made the same claim. The instructions he recorded in one very long inscription were given him in a vision. A man that shone like the heaven, by whose side stood a divine bird, commanded me to build his temple. This man, who from the crown on his head was obviously a god, was later identified as the god Ningirsu. With him was a goddess who held a tablet of her favorite star of the heavens. Her other hand held a holy stylus, with which she indicated to Gudea the favorable planet. A third man, also a god, held in his hand a tablet of precious stone, the plan of the temple it contained. One of Gudea's statues shows him seated, with this tablet on his knees. On the tablet, the divine drawing can clearly be seen. Wise as he was, Gudea was baffled by these architectural instructions, and he sought the advice of a goddess who could interpret divine messages. She explained to him the meaning of the instructions, the plan's measurements, and the size and shape of the bricks to be used. Gudea then employed a male diviner, maker of decisions, and a female searcher of secrets to locate the site on the city's outskirts, where the god wished his temple to be built. He then recruited 216,000 people for the construction job. Gudea's bafflement can readily be understood, for the simple-looking floor plan supposedly gave him the necessary information to build a complex ziggurat, rising high by seven stages. The divine architects, it appears, were able to provide with a single floor plan, accompanied by seven varying scales, the complete instructions for the construction of a seven-stage high-rise temple. It's been said that war spurs man to scientific and material breakthroughs. In ancient Sumer, it seems, temple construction spurred the people and their rulers into greater technological achievements. The ability to carry out major construction work according to prepared architectural plans, to organize and feed a huge labor force, to flatten lands and raise mounds, to mold bricks and transport stones, to bring rare metal and other materials from afar, to cast metal and shape utensils and ornaments, all clearly speak of a high civilization already in full bloom in the 3rd millennium B.C. As masterful as even the earliest Sumerian temples were, they represented but the tip of an iceberg of the scope and richness of the material achievements of the first great civilization known to man. In addition to the invention and development of writing, the Sumerians should be credited with the invention of printing. Millennia before Johann Gutenberg invented printing by using movable type, Sumerian scribes used ready-made type of the various pictographic signs which they used as we now use rubber stamps to impress the desired sequence of signs in the wet clay. They also invented the forerunner of our rotary presses, the cylinder seal. Made of extremely hard stone, it was a small cylinder into which the message or design had been engraved in reverse. Whenever the seal was rolled on wet clay, the imprint created a positive impression. No high civilization would have been possible without a parallel advanced system of mathematics. The Sumerian system, called sexagesimal, combined a mundane 10 with a celestial 6 to obtain a base figure 60. It enables the Sumerians to divide into fractions and multiply into millions. The 360-degree circle, the foot, and its 12 inches are but a few of the examples of the vestiges of Sumerian mathematics still evident in our daily life. The many varieties of metals and alloys for which Sumerian and Akkadian names have been found and the extensive technological terminology attest to the high level of metallurgy in ancient Mesopotamia. The Sumerian use of petroleum products was also basic to the advanced chemistry. Sick persons in Sumerian times could choose between an Azu, that's a water physician, or an Iazu, oil physician. Sumerian medical tests deal with diagnosis and prescriptions. One of Sumer's earliest material achievements was the development of textile and clothing industries. Another major Sumerian achievement was its agriculture. The Sumerians used their two great rivers as an artificial network of canals for waterborne transportation of people, goods, and cattle. In 1956, Professor Samuel M. Kramer, one of the great Sumerologist of our time, reviewed the literary legacy found beneath the mounds of Sumer. The table of contents of From the Tablets of Sumer is a gem in itself, for each one of the 25 chapters described a Sumerian first, including the first schools, the first bicameral congress, the first historian, the first pharmacopoeia, the first farmer's almanac, the first cosmogony, the first cosmology, the first Job, the first Proverbs and Sayings, the first literary debates, the first Noah, the first library catalog, and man's first heroic age, his first law code.